morning I'd like to look with you at the idea of atheism, because they hate us primarily and they hate God. Although it's sort of an irony that they say they hate God when God doesn't exist. How could they hate someone that doesn't exist? But it's important to recognize that there is a lot of atheism in the world today, and sometimes it seems to be on the increase. So if you would turn to the book of Ecclesiastes, and we'll be able to look at something that leads us to understand our responsibility to worship God. And it's Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and having a little difficulty turning pages with one hand this morning, but you'll understand. In chapter 12, beginning of verse 9, the Bible says, "Moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge. Yes, he pondered and sought out and set in order many proverbs. The preacher sought out to find acceptable words, and what was written was upright, words of truth. The words of the wise are like goads, and the words of scholars are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And further, my son, he admonished by these, of making many books there is no end, and much study is worrisome to the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. For fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work unto judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil." This acknowledges the existence of God and speaks to us with regard to how we treat life because of our faith in God. But atheism attacks the reality of God as well as the Christian's lifestyle because they don't like that. So as we look at what atheism really is in the broad sense, the rejection of belief in the existence of deities. In a narrow sense, atheism is specifically positioned that there are no deities. Most inclusively, atheism is the absence in any belief that any deities exist. Atheism is contrasted with theism, which in its most general form is the belief that at least one deity exists. I might mention that in the beginning of our nation, the founding fathers were mostly deists. Many of them believed in God, but they didn't know which God to believe in, but they built the nation upon the faith of God. And so this is different from atheism in its sense. Atheism makes perfect sense when you look at it. The belief that there was nothing and that nothing happened to nothing, which made nothing explode, thus creating everything from nothing for no reason. But then a bunch of everything rearranged itself for no reason into self-replicating bits of that transformed into dinosaurs. But then the dinosaurs used the power of nothing to transform into something else, which then used the power of nothing to transform into humans. That don't matter because there's nothing waiting for them, because nothing exists outside of the everything that nothing blew up and created. And that's nonsense. And you recognize it as nonsense, but that's basically the reality of atheism, that they believe that nothing existed, and then from nothing, something came, and through the process of dinosaurs and apes and fishes and various things, humans came along the way. As an atheist, one man said, "I believe that all life is unspeakably precious because it's only here for a brief moment, a flare against the dark, and then it's gone forever." Now, we just lost our little dog, and I know that it's gone forever. But humans are not that way. How sad to have no concept of eternity, to go through life. And the Bible very clearly tells us that God has planted eternity in our hearts. We understand the concept of eternity, though we may not understand it completely. How sad to deny one's own soul. That there is a part of that man, that woman, that's eternal once it's created, and they're ignoring that. How sad to deny heaven, and how sad to have no hope. And I'm going to make this comment, that atheists provide us nothing. They take away everything precious to us. They take away hope. They take away faith. They take away morality. They take away all these things, but they don't replace it with anything. And so you look simply at the comparison between atheism and Christianity, And you see so many more blessings and results of Christianity that are good, while the atheist simply takes away everything. So that's one thing to remember when you meet an atheist. They're taking away the very promises that you believe in that makes you a human and a child of God. Then we also recognize Epicurus said, is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he is not omnipotent. Is he able but not willing? Then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then where cometh evil? Is he neither able nor willing? Then why call him God? Epicurus was a philosopher of the Romans and the Greeks, and he believed that if it feels good, do it. That's basically the idea that he proposed. And this is an old argument that was used from atheism, that God is responsible for evil in the world. They don't have the answer, but they project what they think. This fails to understand free will and the choices free will allows. God made a robot when he made roses and animals, all those various things. They do as a robot whatever they're programmed to do. But human beings, starting with Adam and Eve, had free will, therefore they could choose between right or wrong. And you understand fully in the Garden of Eden, God did not create evil, but man has the capacity to do either good or evil, and our forefathers chose evil. That's where it came from. That's how evil came into the world. And now that it's in the world, we see the effects of it everywhere, and atheism wants to blame that on God. Evil arises from the heart of those who choose to obey God, even as Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. That's the source of God. And he could have made us robots. I understand that we would do only what we're programmed to do. But when God made human beings, he made a higher form of life. And that form of life has an ability to choose. In that sense, he made us like him in that we're able to discern between right and wrong, and we have choices to make. And if we make the wrong choices, we have to bear the consequences. Atheism denies all of that, of course, and we need to understand how wrong they really are. Brad Pitt, who's a well-known Hollywood star, and many of them have the same attitude, when he said, "When I got untethered from the comfort of religion, it wasn't a loss of faith for me. It was a discovery of self. I had faith that I'm capable enough to handle any situation. There's peace and understanding that I have only one life here and now, and I'm responsible." Man, that scares me to death. You know, everything's depending on what I decide to do, and I know there's evil out there. I know there's evil. And Brad Pitt sometimes can be hit by evil that he doesn't understand because he didn't believe in the answer to evil, which is God. Hollywood is the garden of self-glorification. They're all interested in their ego and promoting their ego. The history of Hollywood is one of hedonism, that is free living, do your thing, do whatever you want to do, and it's straight from Epicureanism. Hollywood has bought into this idea that I'm me, and I'm going to do what I want to do, and it doesn't make any difference what anybody would say. They don't believe in God. And so Brad Pitt have set himself free from the comfort of God and the protection of God. I feel bad for him because he's not going to go to heaven. But how many teenagers have turned to wickedness because of the influence of Hollywood? To say nothing of music and the kind of music that's on airwaves today. But many teenagers have left the Lord, left the church, gone astray because of the Hollywood influence of hedonism, and it makes it seem so much fun. Have you ever noticed, and I have because being a preacher I'm aware of those things, in Hollywood when a movie is made that includes a preacher, he's always a dumbbell. He's always somebody backwoodsy, doesn't know anything, bigoted, and he's always a hypocrite. And that's the kind of portrayal that Hollywood makes of those who would claim to be Christians and those who are preachers. Well, you've got some implications The universe and human life are without purpose. So we're all here just for a short period of time, and it's all going to be gone. And many people are putting the cross in the trash. And that's what's happening today. But in Acts 17, we have the record of the Apostle Paul in the city of Athens. And he said in verse 28, "For in him we live and move and have our being, as also some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring." Even the people who were atheists are, well, they were idolaters. They believed in a number of gods. They believed that, according to Paul, that there was a purpose to life. And you go back to Ecclesiastes again that we read just a moment ago, and you see the same thing. When you think there's no purpose to life, what do you think as you get older? Why am I here? Where am I going? What is it that I'm supposed to be? See, these are all answers of an intelligence. By the way, they've outlawed in America today the idea of intelligent decision making. Intelligent design. That's against the law to teach in schools today. Intelligent design says that somebody built this building. Intelligent design says that someone built the universe. And because there's so much atheism in our schools today, it's against the law to believe in intelligent design. But you know it, and I know it, because everything that is built has a builder. And when you look at the universe, God is the builder. But people don't want to acknowledge that. Then nothing distinguishes man from other forms of life. And that's sort of pitiful to think about, because they say you became from the ape family, and you're just a naked ape, and that you're just an animal like they are, and there's really nothing that you can do to change that except hope that the future of evolution is something better than us. And one evolutionist said that probably man arose from the tapeworm. And I want you to know I'm better than that. Now, I may have tapeworms, but I'm better than tapeworms. So we have to recognize that as well. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul wrote again, beginning in verse 1, "It is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and such sexual immorality is not even named among the Gentiles, that a man has his father's wife. And you are puffed up and have not rather mourned, that he who has done this deed might be taken away from among you. For I indeed, as absent in body but present in spirit, have already judged, as though I were present, him who has done this deed. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, when you are gathered together, along with my spirit, with the power of the Lord Jesus Christ, deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that his spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus." And so there is a morality that we're supposed to understand. And I can recognize that you have two dogs out here, and a dog has some food, and another dog comes along and steals it. And that's just the way animals do. But we don't do it with regard to a man stealing his father's wife, as it did in Corinth, and shame the whole church. There is a morality in human beings that I acknowledge when I say I believe in right or wrong. I can understand a difference between right and wrong. And because I understand that, I can choose better than what an animal does. We have to recognize that as well. Man, they believe, is autonomous, subordinate, and no higher authority. And that's exactly what Paul said to the Romans in chapter 1. They knew God, but they gave up the knowledge of God. And when you give up the knowledge of God, there's no morality standards. Anything goes. And our society has adopted that to a large degree, because today every kind of homosexual, lesbian, transgender is accepted as they are and promoted, and it's crept into all the TV shows. Now that you've got a token homosexual, a man kissing a man, and I've seen that on television, and it's disgusting. Well, you're judgmental. No, I know what's natural. And Paul said that they gave up what was natural and became unnatural. As a man with a man and a woman with a woman, that's not natural. And if everybody practiced that, it wouldn't be long that we would be out of existence. because they can't have children. But you know, there's really a pressing need now for them to adopt children. I've seen that on the television, where they have the right to adopt children. And so there's a book out that's been seen in the schools about a boy that has two mothers and a girl that has two fathers. And somebody says, what's wrong with that? Folks, everything is wrong with that. Now, I know people call me bigoted and racial and everything else because I take that position, but that's the Bible position. Romans chapter 1 condemns it, and we need to be very clear about that. And so when man says, I can do what I want to do, you're rebelling in the face of God. And I can tell you offhand, anybody that debates with God is going to lose. So this whole thing may continue as long as the world lasts. But the terrible thing about it is not a one of them is going to be saved because they've rebelled against God as though they have the authority He does. And there's another implication. Man has no objective, absolute standard by which to calibrate his conduct. Some of this came out as the Nuremberg trials in World War II as it ended. And someone was saying, what right do we have to condemn Hitler? You know, Hitler in his own nation was accepted. And so what was right for Hitler was right in his nation. How can you be critical of that? Well, the Nuremberg trials had to make a realization that some things are right and some things are wrong. Of course, Hitler was never brought to justice, but some of his lieutenants were. And to recognize how bad that is, I don't want to live in a land that has no standards. Now, what's wrong with running a red light? There's no standard. If I want to run a red light, now I know the yellow light means to speed up. But the red light says to stop. And if I don't stop, we're going to have wrecks. But who determines that? Well, we've got laws. Where'd the laws come from? From the government. Where'd the government come from? Because God authorized that in Romans chapter 13, and we're to be obedient to the laws that exist. And when you start saying that there's no objective standard, you're saying that you can do anything you're big enough to do. Now, that was Alexander the Great. He wanted to conquer the world. I don't know how many people he killed in the process, but he killed a lot of people. But that was okay with Alexander, because that's the way he believed. And so if there's nothing, if there's not a standard, what are you going to do when somebody comes into your house and wants to steal something? That's his right. He believes he's right. He's got a right to do that. And there are implications of that. The crowd, the invasion coming into our country from the south today, they've sued America because they have a right to come here. Well, who's to say? Do we have any rights to say what our nation is? Now, I know that's getting a little bit into politics, but it has to do with right and wrong and the acknowledgement that some things are bad. And so we have to recognize that. The little black box saying, God made you in His image. Really? Then why aren't you invisible? See, that's another little barb that atheists say toward us, because we say that God is invisible, but you know there are invisible things. I know, have you ever seen electricity? Now you see the effects of electricity, but you've never seen electricity. And there are invisible things, including our spirits. And I know that I've got one because that's me. And I know that you've got one because that's you. Religion is a delusion, they say. And Paul agreed, if in this life we have hope, only have hope in Christ, we're of all men the most pitiable. It's really true. If Jesus is not real, what are we doing here? Why am I giving up things that I might enjoy? Why am I not on the golf course this morning? Why aren't you home sleeping in bed? Because you have a sense of ought. And that's true with humans. We have a sense of I ought to do this, I ought not to do that. And that's your conscience speaking. And so the Apostle Paul was right in saying, if there's no Christ, then it's pitiful for us to be able to be here this morning without a real reason. Then we'll look at this. They believe in creature worship, worship of self, and pride. That goes along with Hollywood that I mentioned before. And Romans 1 talked about the time when they gave up the knowledge of God and they worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator. So you have idolatry, and the picture shows a man bowing down to the almighty dollar. How many people do that? The richest people in the world don't believe in God. They believe in self. Then, of course, how often do we recognize there's gang violence going on? I think it's supported by some people that they show up at election polls and things of that and try to destroy your desire to vote. But the gang violence is everywhere. MS-13 has come into our nation. And plus you have the Crips and the others. I don't remember all their names now, but there are gangs out there. And I remember reading in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram a few years ago that if you came upon a car sitting next to you at a red light and they've got on a bandana or some identification as a gang, don't look at them. If you look at them, they may shoot you. And sure enough, going to services one Sunday morning, I pulled up beside a car at a red light and there was a guy with a red bandana. And Pauline said, "Don't look, don't look." And I didn't, because I don't want to be shot by some nut. And that's what they are. Let's just call it what it is. There are people who disobey laws. There are people who think they're superior to you, and they'll be able to kill you without any kind of conscience at all. Amoral conduct. Do you understand what amoral is? When you put the letter A in front of moral, it means there are no morals. Amoral means no morals. And it's characterized by hedonism and sexual immorality and deceit and greed. And that's a picture of our life today. That's a picture of our nation today. When you look at the conduct, they have gay pride parade at Disney World. Now, wouldn't you love to have your children at Disney World on Gay Pride Day? And you see all this ungodly makeup and people acting the way they want to act without any kind of conscience. No, you don't want your children to see that, but it's liable to be in your schools. Because that's just the way it is. We have to understand this world is degrading. Then, of course, anarchy and violence and fear. And you go back to Genesis chapter 6 and you see how people were without God. They gave up the knowledge of God. And God finally gave up on them and sent a flood because of their fears and because of their wickedness. Just another instance of Sodom and Gomorrah. And I've really wondered if God doesn't look upon America as Sodom and Gomorrah today. And I recognize that Abraham pleaded with God, and if he could have found five righteous people, that he would not have destroyed that city, those cities, Sodom and Gomorrah. But I just wonder, how many righteous people does it take to preserve America? And I can't give you that number. But I know that back in Daniel's day, on the wall, there appeared a handwriting, a hand and a handwriting, "You're weighed in the balances and found wanting." I believe that's true of America today. I believe America's been weighed in the balances. Now, I'm not God and I'm not making predictions. But I look back at history. When you look back at the history of God and the nations, when a nation gets too big for itself and begins to rage against God, he brings it down. You can look at the Assyrian nation, you can look at the Babylonian nation, you can look at the Persian nation, look at Egypt and others, and they were brought down because of their ego against God. So the practical consequences are the repudiation of the Bible and then the desire to eradicate religion. That's what they want. And so there have been lawsuits. I read an article just recently about Oklahoma. They decided to have a vote. And they wanted to put up the Ten Commandments at a public place. And the liberals said, "Don't do that, don't do that." And they did it. They have the Ten Commandments up in some public places. And around the world, there are taking down crosses off of everything. And over in Europe, they have a place where many thousands of our soldiers were buried during World War II, and they erected a large cross. Now they're trying to take that down because it offends somebody. Well, it offends me that they're trying to take it down. And I hope and pray that Europe doesn't cave into that kind of pressure, because there's a consistent movement in America today to take religion out of our life. I'm not exaggerating. There are people that are absolutely wanting a one world government, and the United Nations will rule over that one world government, and you won't have any religion. And I don't want to be a part of that world either. And so, you have despair. Where do you go when you have despair? I've got Psalms 22, but also think about Psalms 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. How many people have been comforted by that particular passage? I know what it's meant to me. And you can be in the middle of despair and sit down and read that and know that God knows what I'm going through. He's my shepherd. He supplies me with many things that I need. And of course, suicide. On top of that, abortion. On top of that, euthanasism. I may not have spelled that right. But the idea of one political woman has said, in order to save Social Security, we need to have a ban going around the country putting old people to death. They're in our way. Well, that offends me. I are an old person. And I don't want anybody coming around the van and going to shoot me in the arm or something and wipes me out. You know, it's just two sides of the same coin. Abortion and euthanism. Because they want to take lives. Get you out of the way. So I can be secure in my retirement. And it's just an amazing thing that people believe that. There are societies of atheism. The Planned Parenthood is taking our tax dollars to kill babies and sell their parts. And that's so far above my thinking, I can't imagine somebody. And I saw one doctor that admitted he was an abortion doctor and he enjoyed it. And one woman bragged, I don't know what she was making brag or not, but she said she'd had 26 abortions. I mean, where is God in their lives? And you see these things and you recognize we've gone away from God in America. But we have to learn man is subordinate to the authority of God, whether he believes it or not. Now that's the thing we need to recognize. God is over me. You say, oh no, he's not. Yes, he is. Now, a man is a sovereign creature. And what I mean by that is, God allows us as sovereign creatures to make up our decisions, make our decisions and our choices. And so in that sense, I'm sovereign. I can do what I want to do until the judgment day, and then God brings me in to judge what decisions I've made. So I'm sovereign on earth. But when we get back to the judgment day, I'm going to realize God is really the sovereign. Now, for a period of time, if I want to, I can spit in God's face. And people are doing that. Take down all the crosses. Border up all the church buildings. Throw out all the Bibles. Yeah? People are sovereign enough to do that, but they still got to face God. He is the true sovereign, and we need to understand that very clearly. And so the Bible tells us these things very clearly in Romans 1, 32, Romans 6, 23, the wages of sin is death, and all these other passages. And obtaining and maintaining a correct relationship with God. Solomon, in the book of Ecclesiastes that we read earlier, throughout the book, he talked about the great things he had done. He planted gardens. He experimented with various things. He built buildings. He had many wives. All those things, he said, were folly. They didn't mean anything, because when he came to the end of the letter, he said, fear God and keep his commandments. That's the all of man. That's what man is all about. And we need to learn that because God can tell us those things. The theoretical implication, any revelation of the Creator's will concerning man's purpose is important. And I know that everybody here this morning believes that. But an atheist wants to take that away from you. And Paul said, therefore we must give the more earnest heed to the things we've heard, lest we drift away. What bothers me is the pressure on young people today not to believe in God. You go into schools, you've got a lesbian teacher. You go into schools, you've got literature that praises, like, I've got two mamas, I've got two daddies. And so our young people are being exposed to that. And folks, we've got to do better in telling our children to believe in God. Yes, and our grandchildren too, because it's going to mean eternity for them. And so it's a voluntary and loving submission to God. That's what life is all about. And what's important. And so I put up this idea of discipleship journeys with Jesus. It's a journey. And you begin when you become a child of God and you stay with it all the days of your life till you draw your last breath. And I've been with Christians when they die. I've been with non-Christians when they die. I tell you, the difference is astounding. You see a Christian who's dying and you're saying, welcome home. And you see a non-Christian that's dying, and I've witnessed that in my own family. And I just wish they could live longer and turn to God before they go. And they're not willing to do that. So the idea is we need to do better than those things. And I'll get here in a minute. So far as virtue and morality, Peter had some things to say about that in 2 Peter 3, 11 through 14. When you add all the graces in 2 Peter chapter 1, add the graces, then you're ready to live a life of Christian with devotion to religious services, evangelism. And that's what we've been talking about right here this morning. Brother Talley made an announcement about the cards on the front seat, cards on the back seat. Please don't leave without them. And then when you get them, give them away. Because you're advertising the gospel of Christ. You're practicing evangelism. And this church needs to be evangelistic. I believe too many churches of Christ just keeping house today. But when you have something that you can do, then be sure to give those cards away that you'll be able to serve the Lord. Pardon me. So we close with hope and optimism and courage and trust. Simply because we're not atheists. And like I said, I'd like to emphasize this. An atheist takes everything that you believe away. They don't provide anything in its place. And so they're useless. They occupy space and they cause you difficulty. But nevertheless, with our faith, we can overcome mountains. And as Jesus said, move mountains. So if you're here this morning and you've recognized that you're not an atheist, we want you to